Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, happy Monday, everybody, and thank you so much for tuning in to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill. Today, we have with us a former film and television director, Deborah Shames. She is also the co-founder of Eloquy, a Los Angeles-based firm dedicated to enhancing business communication. For over 15 years, Deborah has trained and coached thousands of top-level executives, celebrities, and professionals at major U.S. corporations and nonprofits. After only a few sessions, her clients generate more revenue, advance in their careers, and often receive the highest evaluations when they speak. Prior to co-founding Eloquy, Shames founded the only female-owned production company in the San Francisco Bay Area, Focal Point Productions, which she ran for 15 years. On camera, Deborah directed luminaries including Wendy Malick, Rita Moreno, Danny Glover, and Angela Lansbury. Now, Deborah specializes in coaching CEOs and executives to improve their communications and presentation skills. Deborah speaks pro bono as well at educational institutions such as UCLA's Anderson School of Business, the USC Lloyd Grief Center for Entrepreneurial Studies, Pepperdine graduate level classes, and Cal Lutheran to give young people a boost and confidence at the beginning of their careers. Deborah has led a prominent business group in Calabasas for 10 years and was honored as Consultant of the Year by the San Fernando Business Journal. And today, we're actually very excited to have Deborah on the show to be talking about her new book, her second book actually, called Out in Front, How Women Can Become Engaging, Memorable, and Fearless Speakers. So thank you so much for joining us today, Deborah. It's such a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's so wonderful. So tell our listeners a little bit about the progression of your career. How did you get to where you are? It sounds like you started in entertainment and then kind of moved into leveraging those skills into the professional world.
Well, yes. In terms of entertainment, when you're a director, you know that you have a limited time and budget. And your job, my job, was to bring out the best performance of actors, CEOs, corporate executives. And, you know, when we're in business, we still have to perform and we still have to engage an audience, because if we don't get our point across with concrete language and visual specifics and put ourselves in so that a potential client or customer can tell that we're engaged in the process, we are not nearly as successful as we could be.
I completely agree with you. It's so important. I mean, you only have one opportunity to make that impression or that difference. And whether you're a paid speaking executive or if you're just doing a presentation, not just, but if you're doing a presentation at the office, each is equally as important. And it's great. It's important that we put our best foot forward.
Exactly. And as mammals, we tend to copy each other. So the old habits of speaking are really broken, and yet we still do it. We were told to start with a joke or to repeat ourselves or to gesture a certain way. And those are old models. So what my partner David Booth and I do at Eloquy, and especially with women clients, is bring out their authentic voice, teach them how to better engage an audience, and how to do it in a way that they feel good about it, and the listener, whether it's one or a thousand, says, I like that person, I want to hear more of what they have to sell or what they have to say, I trust them, and there's no better way to really grow your business.
I think that's so important. You're absolutely right. It's just who we are is the words we speak in our brand. And I love what you said about creating that authentic voice. Liz Ryan, we had on the show earlier this year, and she talks about that a lot specifically from a career standpoint. And I think it's so important, no matter what you're writing about, whether it's careers or coaching executives, to understand that authenticity trumps everything else at the end of the day. Because
right.
When you're authentic, people can tell. And when you're BSing, people can also tell.
Yes, and we were just coaching a tech team of 20-somethings who have one of the most important pitches they've ever made on the line. And I'll give you one of the things we told them. When they were talking about their platform and their process, they kept saying that they help their clients. Well, help is a weak word, and we encourage them to use stronger words. How you implement, you advise, you partner, you, whatever it is, pay attention to your verbs because we judge you by your verbs. That's a way that not only can you be authentic, but you come across as strong and muscular and really invested in the process.
Yeah, we tell job seekers the same thing on their resumes. It's so funny how it's whether you're speaking verbally or on paper to somebody, what you say really has an impact depending on the verb you're using and the example or whatever you give to follow that up. If you say you help somebody or if you say you advise somebody, you have to give something substantive that you did advise them on rather than just throwing a fluffy verb or adjective out.
Boy, you sound like me.
I love
without
your book.
Without an example, without somebody saying, oh, I can see that. And the reason examples, Jennifer, are so important is when you have a strong case study, and we would tell our clients, follow the money. What kind of work do you want more of? When you have a strong case study or story, the listener plays the movie in their heads of what you're telling them, and they put themselves in the situation. Even if their environment or their pain point is somewhat different, they see your process, they see how you work, and they can ask you questions and say, well, how would you do it if this is my challenge? So stories are really the silver bullet, and that's one of the things we train all the time, how to tell a good case study or client example.
Yeah, and what was great, one of the things that I picked up a tip in your book, and I love this, I was selfishly excited to interview you on the show because I do a lot of speaking myself, and there's always room to improve no matter how long you've been speaking, whether it's been one day or 20 years. And I love that you reference in your book that when you talk about a current event, it makes it more valid as opposed to, oh, this is just dated material the person has said over and over. And I think it's important to, you know, give people a frame of reference and include current trending topics to make it relevant to that talk right then.
Well, we wrote two books. David and I wrote Own the Room, which was published by McGraw-Hill about 5 years ago. But what the book that you're talking about that just came out in January, Out Front, How Women Can Become Engaging, Memorable, and Fearless Speakers, really addresses how to open a presentation, how to engage an audience, how to structure a compelling anecdote. And what you're talking about in terms of a current event, great speakers throughout time are immediate and current. So if you reference a current event, and make sure it's apolitical, you have enough grief around this issue as it is, but if you reference a current event and then link it to your topic, we go, huh, I haven't thought of that. Or, well, I'll give you a quick example. I remember a few years back when Lululemon, the yoga company, their stock tanked. And I was driving to a meeting, and I heard that news event. And when I got to the meeting, they said, introduce yourself and make it engaging. So I went, okay, I have to walk the talk. And I said, Lululemon's stock tanked today, and they recalled their yoga pants. And it was difficult for many of us. And I said, but you want transparency in your communication skills, not your yoga pants.
So, oh my gosh, that's hilarious. I could see where that would not be a good thing. But like you said, you were able to like bring it in and have it be funny and appropriate for the audience and the topic and the day. And the same is true of interviews. I mean, whether you're stepping into an interview, a meeting, or a formal presentation, it's all these tips that you put forth in both of your books are extremely relevant. So what are a couple of practical tips to becoming a speaker and thought leader in your area?
Whoa, we could go on much longer than this show, but let's start with intention. Number one, know what you want to achieve whenever you go out to speak in front of a room or you're in a job interview or you're in a pitch, and make it an active intention. What will you persuade or convince them of? Most people default to a passive intention. I educate my audience. I will make sure they're informed. I will make sure they understand. Those are weaker intentions. Because if your job is to persuade me of something, you're going to edit your content and you're going to be on the balls of your feet to engage me because your job is to persuade me. Mm. So that's one.
Okay.
Second, when you speak, so Jennifer, if you're going to speak in front of an audience, there's a lot you could tell us, but narrow your focus to no more than three talking points. Whether you're giving a list or you're in front of a room or you're in a pitch, we can't remember more than three. So cop to how the brain is hardwired and only give us three talking points. That'll make your life a lot simpler as well. That's anybody who speaks can use those two tips. But the reason I wrote the book out front for women speakers is we have other issues that men don't tend to have. And it holds us back. And in the world today, we need all the strong, powerful, experienced women that we can find to be speaking out front. And that's why I wrote the book. And if you like, I can talk about issues that I found affect women more than men.
Oh, I would love that. It's very relevant for me. And again, for any of our male listeners out there, they have wonderful women in their lives who I'm sure they would love to, you know, be in partnership with or have be empowered around their speaking. So please do share some of your advice on what holds women back.
One of the things I found is that women will tell me, I don't deserve to speak because I'm not an expert.
Mm.
Well, guess what? We don't do business with experts, and experts are boring, and they talk too long, and they don't put themselves in. They don't have I statements. And so shift that paradigm from wanting to be an expert to saying, look, I'm a seasoned veteran. I came by my knowledge honestly. I've worked in this business as a lawyer, a CPA, financial advisor for years. And I don't need to give you advice. I'm going to tell you what is based on my own experience. When you have the language and behavior of a seasoned veteran, we can listen to you speak for a long time because seasoned veterans are colorful, unlike experts.
Mm.
And they look back in time, they look forward in time, and they make decisions. So practice being a seasoned veteran instead of an expert. It will change everything.
Yeah, you're absolutely right about
that. No, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I remember years ago, I had a mentor of mine who was a social media expert, and it was right when LinkedIn and all these social media tools like Twitter and so forth were just exploding, and he taught me what I knew about social media, which was like the tiniest fraction more than maybe the average person, and I wound up becoming an expert in the field without having real knowledge about it. Like you said, I just kind of took a different seasoned veteran approach. So you're right. It doesn't take being a quote-unquote expert, because that can be very intimidating.
It can be intimidating. It can keep us from speaking. And it isn't what engages and connects with an audience. And one of the other things that a seasoned veteran has is they speak in short, punchy sentences, where an expert can do long run-on sentences and they forget where they're going, or there's no room for an interaction. So for me, I always pay attention to the language and the behavior. Here's another one, Jennifer. So many women strive to be perfect. I get it. I wanted to be the good girl. I wanted to be perfect. And that doesn't serve us. We never have enough time because we're often juggling families and work responsibility. So rather than being perfect, where you write out, research, memorize, or read your statement, God forbid, or your presentation. Instead, work off an outline. Know where you want to go. Have a great open and a great close that you've rehearsed. And when you have an outline, it allows you to put your focus where it belongs, out on the audience, instead of the critic in your head. And you can be flexible and nimble, because when you work off an outline, you can see if you're engaging an audience or not.
You are
and
so
that's,
right.
Yep.
Yeah, that's brilliant. You're absolutely right. And the same is true for job seekers, too, is I tell people, you know, so often job seekers will try to get it right, be it male or female. They try to get it perfect and rehearse, you know, the perfect tell me about yourself or the perfect why somebody should want to hire them. And what I tell people is something similar is I say have 5 to 10 talking points. It's like having an outline and you walk in. And if you can legitimately get those talking points across to your audience, whether it's somebody sitting across you from you in an interview or to 1,000 people in a stadium or wherever you might be, it's the same thing. Just have those talking points and then you can very easily move from one talking point to another, and it's much more fluid and less forced and constrained.
And start with only 3 talking points.
Okay.
You can remember 3. You can salt them into your conversation. And it's what, whether it's a potential job or you're speaking, have your 3. And by the way, if you're in a pitch and someone, let's say a potential client, says, come in and tell us something about yourself, don't take the bait. Don't do it. They really don't care.
Really?
What they really care about is you come in, make assumptions about what you would do to solve their problems. So I would say, Jennifer, if you're like our other client in the manufacturing industry, what they're facing is outsourcing overseas. And what we would provide is this. And you may never get around to talking about yourself, which for women makes us feel much better. But what you're immediately doing is saying how you would solve the problem, how you would partner with them. And there's nothing better in terms of seeing what value you can bring to the situation.
I think that's brilliant. And I know you and I had talked about this as well, is about just encouraging individuals to understand that you do have something to say. And it doesn't, like you said, it doesn't have to be perfect. You just have to be able to go in there. And I love the 3-point thing. I think that's really great, because in my line of work, I always tell job seekers to have at least 5 reasons why somebody should want to hire them and 5 reasons why they would want to be hired, why a company would want to hire them, as well as why they want to work for that company. And after this conversation, Deborah, I think I'm going to implement your 3 rule and instead have 3 3s instead of 3 5s.
Great. And that's, it makes it easy to remember, but even if anxiety causes you
Sorry about that. I don't know what just happened there. That was the universe intervening. It was just so excited to have you on the show.
Thank goodness it wasn't from my end. That's what I typically would have happen. But let's say you're doing a talk and you want to work off an outline. So you have 3 main talking points. Take the first letter or the trigger word that you want to remember, and then form. So if it is flexibility and increased job security, I'm making these up, and great customer service, that forms FIG, F-I-G. So that will trigger my memory when I'm in the moment and I don't have to read my copy.
Yeah, you're right. And, there are some great speakers out there, and it's just such a difference when somebody is present and aware, whether it's one-on-one or 1 on 1,000 or 1 on 20. You know, if you're present in the moment with the people and making eye contact, it's very different than if you're reading off of a cue card and trying to say it exactly the way you wrote it down.
Exactly. One of the things I did in Out Front was bust the myths that hold women back. And the biggest problem that I see women face is anxiety. They don't think they're good enough. They don't think they're experienced enough. And here's another one. Women often believe that audiences are judging us harshly. And it's simply not true. And audience wants you to be good because they want to take away something of value. And that's your job. Instead of focusing on the critic in your head, focus on what you can give the audience that will give value to them. I had terrible anxiety. I was always working behind the scenes. And when I realized that I had something of value to share, that it wasn't about me, everything changed. Mm-hmm. And that's my message I want to convey. And so we need both confidence building and we definitely need practical skills. This isn't, oh, you can do it. Good girl. We need practical skills and what to do, how to fall back on when things go haywire or go wrong or you get pushback. So a good half of the book is on practical skills that you can implement right away to become better.
That's great. And with confidence building, like you said, a lot of us out there might have anxiety before a presentation, before an interview, and so many different circumstances.
Yes.
What are some things or tips that you recommend to people about how they could build confidence so that they're less anxious or stressed?
That's a great question. First, surprises cause anxiety almost more than anything. So minimize surprises. Figure out, like if you're giving a speech, go check out the room ahead of time. Even practice a little, rehearse a little out loud if the room is empty. Any way you can minimize surprises. And if you're going to another city, ask your contact person, what is the room, how is the room configured? If you're going to do a one-on-one interview, do as much background and research as you can, because you want to be prepared. You don't want to be you don't want to make it so prepared that it sounds like you're memorized or generic when you speak, but you really want to know what you're stepping into. And know that things will go awry. If you have a PowerPoint, it will probably fail. So be prepared to step out in front of it. If you thought you were going to be in on at 11 a.m., they may come to you at 9 o'clock and say, we had a cancellation. Can you go early? Think you have with a decision maker, let's say it's a job interview, that you have an hour and the decision maker says, sorry, Deborah, I just got a conference call. We need to cut it short. Be fine with that.
Or extend it. That happens to people a lot, too, where they might extend you another half hour past your expected end time, and then people are cut and they're stressed and they're trying to get back to wherever they need to be. So you're absolutely right. Just be prepared for the unexpected.
Yes, be prepared. And rather than rush and speak faster, if your time is cut short, you know your three main talking points. Go for what you believe is the strongest point you have, and then conclude. And by the way, if you have 20 minutes that you've been asked to give a presentation, finish in 15 to 18 and leave time for questions and interaction. The worst thing you can do is go over. And that usually people go over because they're trying to educate their audience. So that's the first thing you can do to minimize surprises. The next is, start in low ante environments. What happens to many women is they agree to give a talk on their topic, and it's 3 months down the road, and it's to their prospective clients or an audience that they respect. I know for me, when I did that, I would wake up every morning and say, oh my God, how do I get out of this? I can't believe I agreed to speak. And so then the pressure mounts, and then what'll happen is you'll end up playing it safe instead of being authentic, instead of connecting and engaging an audience, just so that you don't make a mistake. So if you start in low ante environments, sit on a panel, introduce someone at a wedding or an event, moderate a panel, any way where the pressure or stress is lower, then you'll be ready for the bigger and bigger engagements. Then there's also sense memory. Hmm. It's what actors and athletes use. If you want to convey confidence as opposed to fear, go back and recreate a time when you were confident, when you were warm, whatever that characteristic is. And sense memory has been around since the 1920s. And then right before you go on, get a quiet space, clear the deck, your mind of anything that is bothering you or that is a responsibility. Do your sense memory and then recall when you were confident. So when you walk up in front of whether it's a potential client or an audience of 500, you will be exhibiting that confidence, because we all make very fast decisions about people in a blink, and you want the decisions that are made about you to be very positive.
I think those are all great advice, because I know, again, I started doing this years ago, and I think what made me have incrementally more confidence every time I spoke is I started doing a lot of volunteer work. I loved when I was reading your bio that you volunteer with schools, and I've started my career probably 15 years ago. Most of the first engagements I did would be schools or small groups and UCLA classes, and then you kind of work your way up slowly but steadily to finally, you know, whether you're doing, you know, 100 people or 500 or whatever's kind of scary for you, you expand yourself incrementally so that when you get there, it's like small approximations that you get you closer and closer to your end goal of, you know, speaking in front of a larger and larger group until you're comfortable with it.
Exactly. And whether it's three people or 3,000, that conversational tone is what really engages and endears an audience to you. So don't go more formal. Don't say, oh, well, a speaker in front of 3,000 people needs to be X, because it's not true. The more you're yourself, the more you speak in a conversational tone, the better it is. Now, if you're on a large stage, your gestures need to be bigger, but that's all. And so as you work up to that, and as you're on a bigger and bigger stage, you'll have the confidence. And by the way, look, I'm Jewish. For me, the glass is always half empty, not half full. I had to learn that when I had a speaking engagement and I was successful, to back success, as opposed to telling myself, oh, but you left out this point. Oh, that person had a frown on their face. They didn't like you. So I tell your audience, especially of women, when you have a success, even a small one, when you're done, bask in it, reflect on it. So the next time you go to speak, instead of remembering all the disasters or where you believe you didn't do well, you'll remember when you did well, when you had a success. You'll bring that up, and that will be the last cue in your memory.
I think that's great advice. Yeah, I remember one of the first speaking engagements. I thought I was going to be on a panel, like you said. I thought small approximations, this will be great. It was probably 10 years ago, and it was 7:30 in the morning, and I showed up for what I thought was a panel in front of 400 of my peers. Yep. I was going to be interviewed on, and they said, oh, so are you ready for your 9 a.m. 20-minute talk on X? And I almost fell over, jaw hit the floor, and thank God, Deborah, somebody had given me advice. I was in a class at that time, and it was all about bringing play and fun to everything you do. Had I not been in that class, I would have just like walked out of there and ran and hid in the bathroom and tried to avoid it. But I was like, oh, what would somebody who is being playful and fun, how would that person be on the stage for this 20 minutes totally unprepared? And I brought play and fun to it, and that's when I started doing formal speaking. I had a line of people out the door saying that was, you know, instrumental, that was totally innovative, and it was off the cuff. And it was, to this day, probably, despite doing professional speaking for years, one of the better speeches I ever gave, because it was authentic and playful.
Well, and look, the bar is really low. Most people that speak in public are terrible.
That's true.
So they loved having someone that was innovative, that didn't start traditional, good morning, thank you for having me, this is my agenda. And you made it about the audience, not about you. So the reason I wrote both books is to encourage more people to speak out about whatever they're passionate about, their nonprofit or their area of law or special needs kids. Whatever it is, get out and speak, but have structure. Know that it's all about what you can bring to the audience, and find your authentic voice. And even that's not easy. My favorite line is from George Burns, for those of you who remember who George Burns was. And he said, acting is all about honesty. If you can fake that, you've got it made.
I've never heard that. That's brilliant.
Oh my gosh. And that's when all eyes are on you, it's very hard to be authentic and honest. That's why we give workshops and classes, and we go into companies and also work with individuals, because when you have to speak and all eyes are on you, you need all the support you can get. You need safety nets. You need to know how to be memorable. And it's so funny, Jennifer. We spend sometimes years becoming good at what we do professionally, but somehow we think, because we've been speaking since we've been a year old, that speaking should come naturally. I have yet to meet anyone born a great speaker. I've met speakers who it looks seamless. You can't see the stitching. You can't see the technique. But they've worked really hard at having their delivery as good as their content or their expertise.
Yeah, you're right. I remember somebody taught me once years ago when I was first starting off. They said, stand on one foot and practice your opening introduction. And the whole point was, is that you had to be so present to stand on the foot and then practice like you would say it to yourself in the mirror, that it actually came across more real. And then by the time you're actually standing on both feet in front of whoever your audience was, please don't do that in an interview, by the way, listeners. I have this horrible vision.
Yeah.
Oh, Jennifer Hill and Deborah James said it would be a good idea to stand on one foot in an interview. I think you might get a little side eye. But it
okay,
didn't help.
Well, I have another version if you're not good at standing on one foot or you've got heels on, okay?
All right, let's hear it.
All right. I want you to rehearse, especially your open, because most anxiety starts 5 minutes before and peaks about 3 minutes after. But when you rehearse, mix up the wording and phrases so it sounds different, slightly different each time. Your message is the same. The details you're going to give are the same. But by mixing it up every time you rehearse, when you finally deliver it in front of a room or a client or a potential client, it may come out a different way than you rehearsed the last time, but it'll still make sense and it'll sound fresh. We all want to believe that a speaker is speaking directly to us and is in the moment and fresh. So that's one rehearsal technique. I have another one that's a little more bizarre that I love to do in workshops.
Okay.
Do you want me to share that
one?
I
would love that. Yes, please.
Okay. We can get kind of tense and tight and formal when we speak, especially if we've rehearsed it a lot, which women tend to do. I want you to rehearse it as something as foreign to you as possible. So maybe as a alien from outer space, or a motorcycle gang member, or a bad Las Vegas entertainer, or an over-the-top diva.
Oh my gosh.
When you do that, you can't help but smile at yourself. You can't help but be looser, and it will give you that kind of energy and shot in the arm that you'll be ready to do it in your own voice when the time comes.
Ah, that's great. And you're right. So much of it is energy. That's the biggest difference, is like you might have really great content and you might be really authentic, but if your energy level isn't there, then there's a hole missing, because like that's half of the presentation, at least in my opinion, is if your energy is not at a certain level, you won't be able to hold the room, whether the room is one person or 200.
That's exactly right. And here's what happens with PowerPoint. When we do our two-day trainings or we go into companies, we always hold off on the PowerPoint module until the very end. Why? Because we've created great speakers, but if we put PowerPoint in the beginning or middle of our training, it tends to deaden the energy and the creativity of speakers, because you end up following what's on the slides. And your PowerPoint becomes a crutch or a cueing device or your script, as opposed to complimenting you, supporting you, and being a visual medium. So anything that complicates the process, make sure that your energy, your commitment, your intention is focused and sharp. And then you can add another element, like a prop, like PowerPoint, like even a video. But first, work on your own delivery, work on engaging with an audience so you don't lose that when you add another element.
I think that's really good advice. It's so important, because I do a lot of PowerPoint presentations. And again, it can be good in some ways because you can actually have, you know, the tools there and the bullet points on the screen. But it can also distract you, like you said, from being present in the moment. And in fact, I think my husband did a class years ago, and he said that in the class he did on PowerPoints, they said that while you're actually speaking, you should have a blank slide, either like a photo or something that's blank while you're doing the substantive speaking, so that people are paying attention to you and not just paying attention to the slide behind you. So I don't know if that's true or not.
I will give you a tip. Never open with PowerPoint. Either have the screen black or have your logo on it. Yes.
I'm taking notes as we speak, Deborah.
The B button on your keyboard will make your screen, if you're in PowerPoint mode, go black, so you can step out in front of it without the light getting in your face.
Oh, brilliant.
There's also a Logitech remote that has a square on it, a black square that you can hit, and that will make the screen go black. And then in the middle of your presentation, whenever you want to tell a story, hit the B button, hit the little black square on your remote, and the screen will go black, and you can connect with the audience and tell a story. And when you hit it again, you haven't lost the slide's still there, then you can advance it. So for your open, your close, and whenever you tell a story, hit the B button. Now, you can also hit the W button, which makes the screen go white, but that's terrible for our skin tone, so I never recommend that.
That's so funny. I wouldn't have even thought of that. So the B button makes it go black and the W button makes it go white, but white is not good for skin tone.
That's correct. I mean, I pay attention to everything. So for example, if you're trying to copy, a woman tries to copy a man and wears a black suit and a white blouse, that signifies that she's an expert, which, as you know already, you don't want to, that's not the message you want to give. So wear clothes that are monochromatic, in line with your skin tone, and so that all the energy, all the attention goes to your face. And when in doubt, wear blue, especially if you're going for a job interview. Blue is trustworthy. Blue is approachable. You want the blink to be that you're ready, you're professional, and you've thought about the image that you want to convey.
Yeah, that's great advice. I know for me, when I tell people, it's totally different. Like if you're going to a networking event, I always tell people be the most brightly dressed person in the room. But when you go into an interview or when you're doing any sort of presentation, you don't want anything that could possibly detract from the words that are coming out of your mouth or the energy or whatever it is you're conveying. If you have too crazy of earrings on or too short of a dress, so many little things, and then people are already judging you and it's an uphill battle the whole rest of your talk.
That's exactly right. And why would you wear a low-cut blouse or a really short skirt if you want to be taken seriously as a professional? Why would you wear a tie? And I've had men say, oh, this is my Jerry Garcia tie, or this is my golf tie. And I'm like, great, so all I'm looking at is your tie.
Yeah.
Great idea. Not.
Yeah, it's like the PowerPoint. Then it distracts from what you're actually saying. And it's funny because the one thing I never realized before, Deborah, I've been to many presentations, I've been privileged enough to lead some presentations on my own, is looking back over the history of all the presentations I've seen, I think I would go so far as to say less than 1/8 of all the presentations I've ever seen have been done by women. I never put that together before today. Do you know any statistics on that, of what percentage of women do speaking versus men or anything of that nature?
I don't know that. I was just reading how few speakers there are nationally. But I will tell you that in terms of college and women that enter college, it's even 50-50. Hmm. But if you work down the road and you look at women in the C-suite, I think it's 5-6%. We have to change that. I'm really on a mission to change that. By the way, it's why on my website outfront.biz, I have a blog and I have short videos and I have the ability to connect with women, because I want to give them the confidence and the skills, especially millennials, that the world is there for you, that the possibilities to advance and achieve what you want is there for you. But I will tell you the things that I've seen that hold millennials back, because what we deal with so many women in positions of whether they're the HR director or lawyers, or they run their own companies. And the only thing that holds them back are definitely within their control. So I'll give you those things that I've seen, those characteristics I've seen, and how to change it. If you're a millennial and you have uptalk, and now I've seen men and heard men as well as women with uptalk, meaning they end every phrase or sentence with an upward inflection, as if there's more to say, or it's a comma, or they're asking for approval, that will drive your audience nuts, and no one will see you as the smart professional that you are. So I want people to practice and get rid of that really annoying habit. And if you're a parent with young kids at home, you can break it before it becomes part of their speech on a regular basis. I say, tell me where you went to school, where you lived, what you studied, the kinds of easy things you don't have to think about, and put a downward inflection or a period at the end of each sentence. So for me, it would be, I grew up on the south side of Chicago. I went to the University of Wisconsin. I studied anthropology in school. And once you practice short sentences with a downward inflection, you can get rid of that annoying uptalk.
Wow.
Next.
Yeah, that's great. Please keep going. This is brilliant. I'm wondering if I do that and I'll have to go back and listen to some prior shows, and I'm hoping I don't, but you never know unless you listen.
You don't.
Okay, good.
But you do have the second characteristic. You speak in long run-on sentences and you speak quickly.
Yes.
Which means I don't know how you think on your feet, but you manage to do it. But more importantly, the audience can't absorb what you're saying because you string sentences together. When Obama first came into office, he had to learn to speak in short sentences with a downward inflection.
Mm.
And that's what I want for millennials to do as well. Because if you run out of energy or air, or you see that you're losing your audience, it could be because you've sped up, which says isn't important, and you don't have short sentences with a downward inflection at the end of each sentence or phrase.
You are a genius, Deborah. I've never heard that. I know I speak quickly. I always say that when I start. Oh, here, now I'm bringing attention to it as we're doing this. I can't even do it while I'm on air and trying to actually actively apply the principles you just taught. But whenever I do a speaking engagement, I joke with people at the beginning. I say, there are two things that you should know about me. One is that I speak very quickly, and two is that I can't help myself. So, you know, raise your hand. So it's kind of like a light, playful joke thing. But I do get it could be more impactful if I spoke in shorter sentences. And
remember the power of the pause. It allows what you just said to be absorbed, which is what you want, because what you're saying is important. And make it more important to you, not the audience. And Mahler, the Gustav Mahler composer, said, if I want listeners to pay attention, I play slower, not faster.
Wow.
So you're not from New York. You can slow it down. It'll allow you to think on your feet. And even more importantly, it'll allow the audience to absorb what it is you have to say.
That is wonderful advice. My speaking engagements later this year will thank you. I will reference you in the engagements and say, this is the new and improved Gen 2.0, thanks to Deborah's coaching.
Thanks.
It has been so much fun.
You know, if you have a very powerful open, if you can hook the audience with your open that's unexpected and that gives your perspective, it really reduces anxiety. But no, I don't want my clients to get rid of anxiety altogether. I like to say Buddhist monks are boring. And if you have no anxiety, it means it isn't important to you. Maybe you've given it too many times. What anxiety gives us is the ability to think quickly on our feet, to have the synapses flowing and connect, and to be present and in the moment. So keep some of that anxiety. It actually serves you.
Got it. Great advice, Deborah. I mean, obviously, I want everybody out there to go and get your book, you know, out front. Brilliant book, whether you're a man or a woman. I know it's geared more towards women, but your advice, Deborah, is so appropriate and so powerful for anybody out there who needs to speak in any situation, which we all find ourselves in some situation or another, engaging with other professionals or speaking or whatever that might look like. And your book, I've read and parts of it, is just brilliant. You have so many wonderful tips in
Thank
there.
You.
So your website again.
Well, it was hard. It took 9 years to finish it. We were busy, and there's no excuse. 2 years ago, I had heart surgery. I had open heart surgery to repair a defective valve I was born with. And when I came out of it, I said, there are two things on my bucket list. I want to hike the Andes in Patagonia, and I want to finish this damn book that's been on the back burner for 9 years. I'll tell you, 4 months after heart surgery, I hiked the Andes.
Aww.
And that was an easy thing to do compared to finishing the book. But I'm so glad I did, because I want this to be my legacy. And I want to encourage and give confidence to women. And that's why I shared my personal journey as well. And for men out there, get Own the Room. You'll get all the techniques that you need and want to be successful. And then there's always my partner, David, that men can call on. And men can say, this is my issue. This is what I want to do and be more effective when it comes to speaking.
Yeah, we all have our different obstacles, and there's sometimes, you know, woman mm-hmm. coach might be wonderful for a man, and sometimes he might need a more masculine energy for something he's dealing with that you or I as women haven't dealt with. So I think that's brilliant that you have yourself and your partner both available. So give our listeners one more time both of your websites. I know we have Eloquy and then we have Outfront. So if you want to give those websites again, I want to make sure everybody knows where to find your book or more information on you.
Thank you. It's either outfront.biz, B as in boy, I, Z as in zebra, or eloquy.biz. And whichever one you do, we will respond to you. And you can buy Outfront on the website or at Amazon or Barnes & Noble. And let me know. I mean, we were just working with an Olympic athlete, and she wrote a review on Amazon. And for as successful as she's been since winning multiple golds at the Olympics, she still second guesses herself in terms of when she has a presentation to give. And I can be there for her, and nothing gives me more satisfaction and more enjoyment.
That's great. I mean, you have such a wonderful gift to give. And I know, you know, selfishly, I've gotten so many wonderful tips, and it's just such a joy to read your book and to have you on the show. And so my intention is that everybody out there got one or more great little tips that they can take out into the world and apply these wonderful principles that are the gifts that you share in both of your books and in today's interview. So thank you so much, Deborah. It's been such a delight to have you on the show.
You are very welcome. And by the way, for anyone that wants to improve their speaking, we're in LA. We give workshops all the time, not just other trainers, but David and I give workshops. So email me, let me know what you want to achieve, and I'll bet we can find a way to have it happen.
That's great.
Thanks,
yeah,
Jennifer.
I will definitely look into that. And do remember that in case you missed any piece of this interview live or you miss any of our interviews, you can always find the show on iTunes, and you can go to Get Yourself the Job on iTunes or download the archive of the show as soon as the show is over. It's available for you to download at your convenience anytime. So tune in next week when we have Todd Moster on the show. And again, Deborah, it's been a pleasure. And to everybody out there, have an extraordinary week.
Thank you.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.